This has actually been done a number of times in the past. That's, they were using people of color there. As a similar tactic, just 1 month ago in India, on April 15th, Suman Sahai from the Jean Campaign was holding a press conference in New Delhi where they were presenting data that she had collected about the failure of BT cotton in the state of Andhra Pradesh. They also had a video. She had interviewed over 100 farmers, taken data, and there was also a videotape from the Minister of Agriculture for the state of Andhra Pradesh saying that the BT cotton had been a failure this spring. Their press conference was disrupted by about 15 to 20 farmers talking about how great the BT cotton was. Turns out they had been brought in from Andhra Pradesh in an air-conditioned bus that was sitting out front of the hall, paid for by Myco and Monsanto. So for those of you that know the Indian politics, Suman Sahai and the Jean Campaign, they are incredibly moderate. She thinks biotechnology can be useful, it's just that there should be good science behind it. So even the moderate folks were being disrupted through these techniques. Another story from India that shows how they can play the version of the race card over in India is a few years ago there was actually a demonstration in New Delhi in support of BT cotton. And what was happening there is during some of the early trials, there was a farmers' movements, and there was particularly one leader, Najunda Swami, and his folks were going around burning the BT cotton fields, the experimental fields. What you need to know about Indian politics or Indian classes is you have castes. And actually, Najunda Swami and his farmers' organizations that he represents are Brahmins. They're sort of a more middle class. What had happened is the seed companies very effectively knew how to play caste politics. So what they had done is they had taken cotton seeds, given them to free for the Dalits. And who Dalits are is those are the untouchable. Those are the lowest caste in India. That if you're higher caste, they're not supposed to be touched. That's why they're called the untouchables. The caste system is not supposed to is outlawed in India, but it still does occur. So these Dalits were given these free seeds, and the arguments they used to get other folks to come to this rally in New Delhi, these 300 farmers in support of BT cotton, was who are you gonna listen to? Are you gonna listen to Najunda Swami and the Brahmins, or are you gonna listen to fellow Dalits? So a very effective playing of the caste card, which is the Indian equivalent of the race card, to try to make there appear to be support for BT cotton. If we also look to the whole issue of food aid and the way you can dump things on other countries, there are some of us that think that perhaps that some of these engineered crops are being deliberately dumped as food aid into other countries, and just a couple of stories there. We know for a fact that Starlink has been found in food aid that was sent to Bolivia. About 2 to 3 years ago, the consumer group in Colombia, COCO, was just starting. They wanted to do a campaign on genetic engineering. I went down to help them out. They had also, for part of this campaign, there's a aid program in Colombia for homeless and poor women where they're given free soybean products, soy milk and that. And it's supposed to be Colombian soybeans, so they use local beans to give to the poorest of the poor. But what happened is, more recently, the Colombian government, we think under pressure from the U.S., decided to change, and rather than take Colombian soybeans, they decided, well, we'll just take whatever is cheapest we can get. So they were taking soybeans from the United States. And what COCO did is, with representatives of the government, they took samples so that it was verified that they weren't cooking anything up. They took samples of these soybeans and they sent them off to be tested. 93% of the soy donation was genetically engineered. That was a couple years ago. That is higher, much higher percentage than the percentage of the soy in the U.S. I think by that time, a couple years ago, it would have been about 60% of the U.S. crop was engineered, and yet 93% of the soy that they tested in Colombia was Roundup ready, suggesting that it had been selectively dumped. We also have the case to show you the bullying tactics that the U.S. can use. In 1999, Sri Lanka tried to form, was one of the first countries in the world. They tried to pass a law legislation that would ban imports or any use of genetically engineered foods. The U.S. brought massive pressure to bear. There was behind the scenes, they were able to get the law. First was supposed to go into effect in March. They were able to get it delayed. And then the day before it was set to go into effect on the last day of August, massive pressure was brought to bear and they removed the law from the books. And that was the U.S. at the time was threatening, said, telling Sri Lanka that if they did this, that could potentially be a violation under the WTO, that it would be a non-tariff trade barrier. So Sri Lanka folded. A story from Codex Alimentarius 2 years ago at the Codex Committee on Food Labeling. The Nigerian delegation that was there, we became sort of close to them because one of the NGOs I was working with there from the IFDAN, from the Infant Baby Food Action Network, actually had lived in the same tiny village that the head of the Nigerian delegation was from, and he was shocked to hear somebody that was speaking his local dialect. They knew people in common. So we became, so he was very friendly to us, and he told us this story that he was the head of the delegation and that the U.S. had sent some lawyers over to Nigeria trying to get Nigeria to support the U.S.'s position that you don't need to label genetically engineered foods. And they first talked to this person, I don't want to give his name, they first talked to him and he basically said no, that wasn't his position, that wasn't the position of Nigeria. So the folks in the U.S., he told us, went to the other ministries. They went to trade and all these other ministries to try to get them to support it. And all these other ministries said, no, you have to go, you have to talk to the head of the delegation. That's where the position is made. You have to talk with them. The report, the lawyers came back. They tried to, I guess, try some pressure tactics. They talked to him. He finally got fed up with this and threw him out of his office. When they were being thrown out, these two people, these two lawyers said, they said, if you don't support us, we're going to withdraw all aid to your country and your people will starve. And he just looked at these two folks and said, look, you can withdraw the aid you want to Nigeria, but you should know, number one, most of that aid does not go to the people. It goes to the government officials. And if those of you that know African politics, there is a fair amount of corruption in Nigeria. And he said, secondly, that there is a lot of food and that the people of Nigeria can feed themselves. And he told us he thought this was very arrogant behavior. And we said that he realized that this was not reflective of Americans as a people, but that was the the position of the U.S. government. And that year, actually, at the Codex Committee on Food Labeling, Nigeria came out very strongly in support of mandatory labeling. There were stories in the newspaper about Nigeria saying this. The story that I just told you, of course, he did not want to repeat it to any of the reporters. And unfortunately, last year, he didn't return. Nigeria hasn't actually been back to the Codex Committee on Food Labeling. They have been to the Ad Hoc Task Force, and they have actually played a very good role there. So that's a various form of pressure tactics. The last example I'd like to talk about is what has happened in Zambia. Zambia was the one country in the world during the supposed crisis of the starvation and famine in southern Africa. There were all these wild rumors going around that 14 million people were going to starve. They then, in just the Southern Africa region alone, the U.S. then added Ethiopia and other countries and set up to 28 million people could starve. In Zambia, the area of concern was in the southern part of the country. That was supposed to be 2.9 million people is what they said. As Dr. Lee Wanika pointed out, in August of last year, they had a national meeting. It's called an Ndaba in the middle of August. And that's where they decided that they did not want to that they did not want to accept this grain. And what was important about that meeting is that what surprised everybody, when I was in Zambia, I talked to the NGOs. I actually talked with folks in both the Zambian government with their Minister of Agriculture, and we even got to talk to the U.S. Embassy, which was a trip in itself. But all sides agreed on one point. There was what surprised everybody is that 10 of the chiefs from the south were there. And the traditional power structure in Zambia still resides in kingdoms and chieftains, right? So these chiefs, 10 of them were there at the meeting. The NGOs I talked to were actually, they didn't know, they thought maybe they had been brought by the World Food Program. They wondered what they were going to say. They thought maybe they'll get up and say, we need these foods. And what those 10 chiefs from the south, from the affected region said is, yes, there are people in our areas that don't have a lot of food. Nobody is dying yet. They are malnourished. But we're also concerned about the long-term health of our children. And that's why we support the government's decision not to accept this engineered aid. That was in the middle of August, at the end of August, at the World Summit on Sustainable Development, where Colin Powell was there. The Minister of Agriculture in Zambia told us this story where he said while he was there, CNN was running a story that had some pro-scientist talking about how great genetic engineering was and how refusing to accept that would lead to starvation. And in what they were showing on CNN during this in Africa, where they were showing starving Africans. And as the Zambian agriculture minister told us, he was very angry because he said, you folks in America might not realize that, but the people they were showing on the screen were Ethiopians and Somalis. They were not Zambians. Colin Powell then, as more pressure tactics, is after Zambia made that decision, we had two black folks from the U.S. Congress, including J.C. Watts, travel to Zambia to try to pressure them to take this food. They said it was wonderful. We had Colin Powell visiting the Vatican, trying to get the Pope to speak out and to say that Zambia should accept this. There was an NGO in Zambia called the Jesuit Center for Theological Reflection. Even the guy from the American Embassy admitted that they did actually represent the interests of the poor. The Jesuit Center for Theological Reflection has been fighting against, as part of Jubilee 2000, against the structural adjustment program for getting rid of the debt in Zambia. And they had actually done a technical report that supported the position of the government. The head of the Jesuit Center for Theological Reflection told us that while Colin Powell was in Rome, he'd also met with the head of the Jesuits there and tried to put pressure on them to tell the Jesuit Center for Theological Reflection to keep their mouths shut and not say anything about this issue. That, of course, didn't work. Then we had, in December of last year, Tony Hall, and this is really sad, because Tony Hall was a very progressive senator who was in the Congress. He was the one that always fought for food aid for the poor and actually for World Hunger Year and hunger within the United States. He would hold, there was actually a couple times to get aid within the U.S. for the poor that he did hunger strikes and that. He was in, late last year, was sent as the food ambassador to the U.S., to Rome, to represent the U.S. at the food agencies, such as the Food and Agriculture Organization, IFAD, the International Forum for Agricultural Development, and the World Food Program. And Tony Hall, in mid-December, I think this is disgusting, gave a press conference, and he said that the people that were involved in making the decision in Zambia to reject food aid should be tried for crimes against humanity. Not less than 3 weeks later, there was a closed-door meeting the first week in January that the German Marshall Fund held in Brussels was about the U.S.-EU conflict and also brought in folks from Zambia. I was at that meeting, as was Dr. Lee Wanika, and it was interesting because this was right at the same time that Zelik, our trade representative, literally the day we were there, that Wall Street Journal came out with those quotes claiming that the position of the European Union was immoral because they were causing people to die in Africa by telling them not to accept genetically engineered foods. Norman Borlaug had an editorial in the Wall Street Journal saying that European ministers were telling African countries, they were threatening them that they would get no development aid unless they passed anti-GE, unless they took an anti-GE position. That was all false. Because of that letter, the six ministers from the European Union were furious. They sent a letter to the Wall Street Journal and demanded a retraction. They said, why didn't you try to verify any of this? Those are lies. And I thought there was a great comment. One of the European Union ministers, the one for development, said, we'll make you a deal. If the U.S. will stop telling lies about us, we'll stop telling the truth about the United States. Doctor, I just want to, also at that meeting, I thought it was very funny. I hope he doesn't mind me telling this, but Dr. Liwanika, when we all went around and introduced ourselves, Dr. Liwanika had a great introduction. He said that he was risking his life to come to this meeting because he had been one of the people that had been involved in the decision. And since the U.S. said that these people should be tried for crimes against humanity, he pointed out that the International Court of Justice is located in Brussels, and so that he was risking his potentially being jailed by coming there. And the other thing that was, I'll just tell one other story from there. The U.S., there was a U.S. trade rep there, and it was interesting because the Europeans trade reps that were there were basically saying that the U.S. shouldn't be bringing a challenge on labeling and traceability because they said you'll probably lose it. It will cause all this tension between our countries. And this person from the U.S. just looked at them and said, you have to understand, this is not necessarily about the European Union. This is about sending a message to third countries. At that point, there was someone from Europe that was a British guy that said, gee, this reminded him. He told a story of from the 1800s how when the British had hanged an admiral, and the reason they gave for hanging the admiral is every once in a while you have to hang an admiral to get the attention of the others. That was, everyone sort of laughed. And so here we had that kind of stuff going on. And then finally, while I was in Zambia in November, the other thing that was going on is that the World Food Program was refusing, in part because of U.S. pressure, was refusing not only to buy corn in the region, and yet there was, FAO had said within the region there was 1.5 million metric tons. They wouldn't buy it, they had to get it from the U.S. And the World Food Program was also refusing to buy in the northern part of Zambia. The problem was in the southern part of Zambia. In the northern part of Zambia, they had 100,000 excess metric tons of cassava. And there were groups saying, if you just give us the money, we can buy the cassava in the north, ship it to the south, and that helps stimulate agriculture in the north. There was a videotape that had been produced that had traders in the north that are cassava traders going, yeah, there's all this excess of production, we can easily sell it. There was the program on malnutrition, a Zambian NGO, that actually has offices in all the 73 districts. They said, all we need is money, and we've got the trucks and everything. If we get the money, we can buy the stuff, send it down to the southern part of Zambia, but the World Food Program was refusing to put out any money, because I think what they wanted to do is they wanted to force Zambia to accept this food aid, because they wanted the pictures of showing people that were supposedly hungry or starving eating this food so they could say that genetically engineered food is good and will help feed the world. So I think with all these stories we can see that environmental racism works in different ways, and It works against the people that have the least power and that are poor, and overwhelmingly in this world, those are people of color. And this is in part how the U.S. plays out the game and how Monsanto has done it too. And I just want to end by saying I think it's a very courageous stand that a little tiny African country took to stand up to the U.S. and to stand up to all that pressure, and there was massive amounts. And they have still continued to maintain their stance and just less than a month ago, there was a report in Reuters in mid-April that the rains that have come, there's such now an excess of corn from the harvest that because of all this donated corn, there's an excess, and so the farmers can't sell it all, and they're concerned that if they can't sell it, they probably won't plant it for the next season. So the World Food Program is saying, well, now we'll buy up the excess from these farmers and ship it to other African countries. So it makes you wonder, where are these 2.9 million people that were going to be starving to death, and now there's bumper crops? So it makes some of us believe that this was all a cynical ploy to try to get these crops accepted, because they have a bad image in Europe and in Asia, in that Africa was seen, maybe we could use the famine to try to show that these crops can be good and can actually feed poor people. And I think this kind of behavior is it's sort of sad, but that's how power works. And that's why all of us need to sort of speak truth to power and support those countries and those people who are trying to resist the onslaught that's coming from the north. Thanks.
Thank you. I want us to do two things. First of all, I wanted to thank this panel for the information they brought to us.